Hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, verse, Chapter 22, verse 45. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. सैन्यपत्यं च राजं च
सैन्यपत्यं च राजं च
सैन्यपत्यं च राजं च
सैन्यपत्यं च राजं च
दण्डनेत्रं नेतृत्वमेव च
दण्डनेत्रत्वमेव च
दण्डनेत्रत्वमेव च
दण्डनेत्रत्वमेव च
सर्वलोकाधिपत्यं च सर्वलोकाधिपत्यं च वेदशास्त्रविदर्हति वेदशास्त्राविदर्हति सैन्यपत्यं च राज्यं च दण्डनेतृत्वमेव च सर्वलोकाधिपत्यं च वेदशास्त्राविदर्हति सैन्यपत्यं च राज्यं च दण्डनेतृत्वमेव च सर्वलोकाधिपत्यं च वेदशास्त्राविदर्हति What word meaning? Sainyapatyam. Post of Commander-in-Chief. Cha. And. Rajyam. Post of ruler over the kingdom. Cha. And. Danda. Ruling. Netritvam. Leadership. Eva. Certainly. Cha. And. Sarva. All. Lokadhipatyam. Proprietorship of the planet. Cha. And. Vedashastravit. One who knows the purport of Vedic literature. Arhati. Deserves. Translation. Since only a person who is completely educated according to the principles of Vedic knowledge deserves to be the commander-in-chief, ruler of the state, the first to chastise and the proprietor of whole planet. Prithu Maharaj offered everything to the commanders. Please repeat the translation. Since only a person who is completely educated according to the principles of Vedic knowledge deserves to be commander-in-chief, ruler of the state, the first to chastise, and the proprietor of the whole planet. Prithu Maharaj offered everything to the Kumaras. In this verse, it is very clearly stated, just before I begin, if you have your gadgets, take the purport. It's a very nice purport, it's a little long. In this verse, it is very clearly stated that a kingdom, state or empire must be governed under the instructions of saintly persons and brahmanas like the kumaras. When monarchy ruled throughout the world, the monarchy was actually directed by a board of brahmanas and saintly persons. The king, as the administrator of the state, executed his duties as a servant of the brahmanas. It was not that the kings or brahmanas were dictators. Nor did they consider themselves proprietor of the state. The kings were also well versed in Vedic literatures and thus were familiar with the injunctions of Sri Ishopanishad. Isavasyam idam sarvam. Everything that exists belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna also claims that he is the proprietor of all planetary system, Sarva Loka Maheshwara. Since this is the case, no one can claim to be proprietor of the state. The king, president or head of the state should always remember that he is not the proprietor but the servant. In the present age, the king or president forgets that he is a servant of God and thinks of himself as servant of the people. The present democratic government is proclaimed to be people's government, a government by the people and for the people. But this type of government is not sanctioned by the Vedas. The Vedas maintain that a kingdom should be governed for the purpose of satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead and should therefore be ruled by a representative of the Lord. The head of a state should not be appointed if he is bereft of all Vedic knowledge. In this verse, it is clearly stated, Veda Shastra Vid Arhati, that all high government posts are especially meant for persons who are well conversant with the teachings of the Vedas. In the Vedas, there are definite instructions defining how a king, commander-in-chief, soldier and citizen should behave. Unfortunately, there are many so-called philosophers in the present age who give instructions without citing authority, and many leaders follow their unauthorized instructions. Consequently, people are not happy. The modern theory of dialectical communism set forth by Karl Marx and followed by communist government is not perfect. According to Vedic communism, no one in the state should ever starve. Presently, there are many bogus institutions which are collecting funds from public for the purpose of giving food to starving people. But these funds are invariably misused. According to Vedic instructions, the government should arrange things in such a way that there will be no question of starvation. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that the householder must see to it that even a lizard or a snake does not starve. They also must be given food. In actuality, however, there is no question of starvation because everything is property of Supreme Lord, and He sees to it that there is ample arrangement for feeding everyone. In the Vedas, Katha Upanishad 2:2-13, it is said, Eka Bahunam Yo Vidhadati Kaman. The Supreme Lord supplies the necessities of life to everyone, and there is no question of starvation. If anyone starves, it is due to the mismanagement of the so-called ruler, governor or president. It is clearly therefore that a person who is not well versed in Vedic injunctions, Veda Shastra Vid, should not run for elections as president, governor, etc. Formerly kings were Rajarishis, which meant that although they were serving as kings, they were as good as saintly persons because they would not transgress any of the injunctions of Vedic scriptures and would rule under the direction of great saintly persons and Brahmanas. According to this arrangement, modern presidents, governors and chief executive officers are all unworthy of their posts because they are not conversant with Vedic administrative knowledge and they do not take direction from great saintly persons and Brahmanas. Because of his disobedience to the order of the Vedas and Brahmanas, King Vena, Prithu Maharaj's father, was killed by the Brahmanas. Prithu Maharaj therefore knew very well that it behooved him to rule the planet as servant of saintly persons and Brahmanas.
स्वयं रूप कदामयं ददाति स्वरूप दान्तिकम् हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिक कांत राधा कांत नमस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौराकी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिय मंचगर्भतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितनाम पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
नमो विष्णु पदाय कृष्णाय भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नित्य नामिनि नमस्ते सरस्वती देव गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे हरे कृष्ण सम वर्सेस एंड पर्पोट्स व्हेन यू रीड यू वेरी क्लियरली नो यू शुड नॉट स्पीक ऑन देम यू हैव नो राइट टू स्पीक ऑन दीज वर्सेस So I thought Let me prepare for myself. If anyone gets benefit, that's a bonus. Seeking out the blessing to speak on this verse and apply it. Because this is talking about setting up example based on scripture. The whole verse and the purport especially, it's amazing purport actually. Srila Prabhupada's purport suggests to. In this particular purport, Srila Prabhupada is giving a very high expectation for a leader to follow. And while I was reading this purport, suddenly one thing struck to me that is this doable? Can this ever happen? Now at least. Even Prabhupada's time, which is 40 odd years before, while writing, I think he will also be sure of it. Unless Krishna has some other plan which he may have access to, that this is not going to take place. This standard will not be followed. It's too much of a high standard to follow by leaders of society now throughout the world. That where the governments are run, ruled and selected practically based on the brahmanas or learned people in Vedic scriptures. So, what to speak of anywhere else in the world, even in India, it will not happen. It's very hard. So, actually, according to Vedic culture, a leader can only be, especially head of the state, can only be either a Brahmana or a Kshatriya. Either a person learned Vedic science, or a king who follows those who are learned in Vedic science. So mostly Brahmanas will not rule as head of states, but if emergency comes they can, but most of the times their job is to guide the king who is ruling the head of the state. Because if very carefully observed, only these two classes have capacity to think beyond them and their close ones' needs. So in society, a Brahmana and Kshatriya only have capacity to think beyond themselves, think about others' welfare. Rest of the society is very much concerned about how to make money for themselves and their family and secure their families. So we currently see also in many major countries when Vaishyas or business people are ruling the state, the head of the state. It's very different because their mindset is very different. One very simple principle a ruler has to follow is that he has to be convinced of one fact, that his job is to 100% give himself to the people. Nothing for oneself, only for the people. Keeping God in center, very important. But we see that practically in our heads we can think most of the countries, the head of the state, the presidents or prime ministers or the governors are very much driven by this principle of to secure oneself and one's family and one's own people of one's own community or society or religion. So there is a nice story about Manu Maharaj, who is the father of mankind. That when he retired, many other kings approached him. Many kings approached Manu Maharaj and asked him about what should be the duty of us, what should be our duty as kings, how should we instruct the people, how we should behave and deal with the people. And Manu Maharaj started speaking very heavily, very strongly. He was so heavy, so strong that even there were thunderstorms. His speech was so intense that there were thunderstorms, and the listeners were also shaking, seeing the intensity of Manu Maharaj emphasizing one particular point, that you have to give yourself to the people. So when we are saying the kings or the rulers, then we can think about the politicians. But as soon as we say about the Brahmanas, we have to think about ourselves also. Not that we are great as Brahmanas, but as devotees we are trying to develop that culture, Brahmanical culture. So he was saying that a leader has to develop this one particular quality, that he has to go out of his way to help others,
to benefit others.
That's one particular thing he mentioned. But then amongst the group, one courageous king asked one Maharaj, but you see, for a king, he's very much attracted to the privileges. People are following, money comes, everyone is following you. So what about that? What about these privileges which can come to a king?
Or in terms of devotees, if a position or a leadership role comes,
then many privileges also will follow. So Manoharan gave a very nice instruction, a very nice point. He said that of course as a king privileges will come, but those privileges will come to you as a king when people will see that you have virtue. If you don't have that, then people will stop following you and just wait for some time. His point was that people will bow down to you if you have virtue. And you see, in the very nice story of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was once at the airport and 300-400 devotees came to receive him at the airport. Like, they were in Kirtan in the airport because they were allowed inside the airport. Hundreds of devotees were there to receive Prabhupada. It was a scene. The whole airport stopped to just see what's happening here. Imagine in Melbourne, right, when the plane stops, there are hundreds of devotees doing Kirtan to receive you. So when I think Prabhupada was just Malakrishna Maharaj, if I'm not wrong. And then when Prabhupada came, everyone bowed down to him. Hundreds of devotees flat on the ground in the airport. And then Prabhupada asked devotee next to him, why are they bowing down to me? So naturally devotee would say, oh, you are pure devotee. You have surrendered your life to Krishna. And many other answers. Prabhupada said, no. Because you have controlled sex desire, they are bowing down to me. So he was teaching his student one lesson basically. So basically showing a very good example spiritual master. And in contrary, you see, taking a classic example, especially in India where so many gurus and yogis are there, the majority of the people, if you speak to people coming from India and you speak to them about religion or following scriptures, many of them have lost faith just because they didn't see a good example in someone whom they followed or in someone whom their relatives were following. And that led to a degree that they very bluntly and very openly accept, coming from the land of gods, coming from the land of yoga, they don't mind seeing themselves as atheists because their faith is completely smashed. Their faith is completely, it's literally ruined for good in some cases. And the major part is played to ruin that faith is the leaders, the spiritual leaders, not showing virtuous qualities. What to speak of spiritual qualities, that forget it. People anyways have no access to see how advanced spiritually a leader is. But at least, materially, certain basic qualities a leader has to show. So that was not seen. So people have lost faith in the whole thing. Leader by nature is someone, when he does something, that itself becomes a proof. Sometimes we read in certain manuals, certain procedures have to be followed. And when you either come to temple, or you are greeting the deities, or you are meeting devotees. And then we see a senior leader who might be trained in a different way, or from his side he may have a back problem, which we don't know, or he may have certain health issues, and he doesn't bow down.
For us, who are just watching them, it becomes a very natural reason within ourselves to not do it. That's how natural it is for us to follow a leader, and that becomes a proof for us that yes, such and such devotee did. And that's why most of the devotees, either they're giving classes or they want to establish one point, they say Prabhupada said that, or such and such guru said that, or such and such senior devotee said that. Because that itself becomes proof. In Prabhupada's time, this used to happen. If devotees have to push on with their agenda, they would say Prabhupada said that. And then few times it happened and it reached to Prabhupada that devotees are just quoting you. And Prabhupada had to make a statement, because quoting him was becoming a proof. So he had to give a statement saying that until you hear from me directly or you read in the books, don't follow what Prabhupada said. So that's there. So some very, very natural for everyone to look up to the leader. That very famous verse in Bhagavad Gita is there. Whatever action a great man performs, common man follows. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Whatever example he sets, whatever standards he set by his exemplary act, everyone just follows that. There is no way forward, there is no questioning. So, this purport is just amazing. I'll just read a couple of lines from the purport. People in general always require a leader who can teach the public by practical behavior. This is 3rd chapter, 21st verse. Who can teach the public by practical behavior. A leader cannot teach the public to stop smoking if he himself smokes. Lord Chaitanya said that a teacher should behave properly before he begins teaching. One who teaches in that way is called Acharya or ideal teacher. Therefore, a teacher must follow the principles of Shastra, scriptures, to teach the common man. A teacher cannot manufacture rules against the principles of revealed scriptures. Very important point. Something to learn from by all of us, for me for sure. Why such principle is a reality that everyone naturally follows a leader? Because everyone needs a leader. That's the first line of the purport. Everyone in society needs a leader. In a family also, children are looking up to parents. Even we are in ashram, we also look up to a leader. When we are in a bhakta riksha group, we also look up to a leader. When we are in a temple setup, we also look up to a leader. Positions may differ, but at every given time we look up to a leader. We look up to a spiritual master. And that's where their example is always on a very high standard. And they know very well that many of us will not be able to follow. But still, they speak of high standard and they practice a high standard. There is a nice story actually about Birbal. Birbal was a minister in the kingdom of Akbar, who was ruling the whole India, I think 500 plus years before. So, Akbar was ruling and Birbal was his minister, and Birbal was known to be very witty, very smart, extremely sharp, very learned in scriptures. His name before becoming a servant in Akbar's kingdom was Mahesh Das. And then when Akbar appointed him, of course he had to give him a different name. But it was a very big position. Akbar would take all his major decisions speaking to Birbal. So Birbal's glories spread through Persia to the Shah of Persia, the king of Persia. And he wanted to meet Birbal. He wanted to see Birbal. So he approached Akbar and asked if Birbal can come and meet him. He would like to see him. And so Birbal was sent to meet the Shah of Persia. And he goes to Persia and now he enters the main chambers, the main kingdom, the main assembly hall. And he saw that six people are sitting on the same throne with the same clothes looking alike. Very similar. And these are the times where Facebook or Twitter was not there, where people could see who Shah of Persia looks like, and he would just go and meet. So he had no idea who this guy, what this guy looks like. So he went and saw, he saw six people with same throne, same clothes, in the same fashion, sitting right in front of him. So he understood, oh, it's a test for me. So Birbal understood, it's a test for me. So then when Birbal entered, in just few seconds, he didn't even take minutes, in few seconds, he went to the Shah, the person, the actual Shah, and he gave him the gifts, that Akbar has sent these gifts for you. And the Shah was shocked. How did he recognize me so quickly, in this fraction of second? The Birbal said it was very easy. He said, you all look same, you all appear same, what you are wearing, your decoration, your throat, everything is same. But you are looking at me and the rest five are looking at you. So he was establishing the point that everyone looks up to the leader. So with his very sharp intellect, we will figure this out so quickly that who must be the ruler. So there is another in devotee community, we try to connect the example of a king and trying to connect with us, because no point just we talk about the king and we don't get anything out of it, because we also know this principle will not be able to be applied practically. But what we can do practically for us, even in devotee community, we see when there are leaders who are either having a group of devotees which whom they are preaching to, or whether it's in Bhakti Riksha forms or Harinams or Namahatta home programs or university or wherever we are, then naturally what happens that because we are sitting on a Vyasasana or a place where we are speaking authoritatively, then naturally people start to follow and they start to give respect. That literally means they start to look up towards us. So then a tendency which can be there amongst the leader of that certain group is to utilize that position to gain something. To gain something materially out of that relationship. As a leader, one has to be very careful in doing that, because again we fall in the same trap which many spiritual so-called gurus have done in India, which has shaken the faith of people. And instead of, the goal was to preach them, to bring them close to God, but just by this one misuse of the position where we try to get something out of our relationship, it can be something very minor, people can really sense it. And devotees can really sense if the leader or their Shiksha Guru or their mentor is very much just selflessly giving. And they can very quickly sense if there is a tinge of utilizing that relationship. It may appear to us as leaders that they can't figure it out, but actually people can figure it out. Very careful. We have to be very careful just to protect one's own spiritual life and people's faith also. And that's where a very strong point in this purport Prabhupada is emphasizing, that our leader has to be Shastra, has to be learned in scriptures, very learned in scriptures. Because if a leader is not learned in scriptures, then the approach of the leader or the decision making of the leader will be based on his own intelligence, rather than the intelligence given by the scriptures. So when that happens, then a king who is also trying to instruct the citizens, or a brahmana also who is trying to instruct his followers, will use one's own intelligence, and that intelligence may get corrupted due to personal motives or people around us dictating us to gain something materially out of that relationship. But if it is scripturally driven, if the decision making is done based on scriptures, that means completely for the purpose of satisfying the Supreme Lord, because that's the conclusion of the Shastra, then naturally we will not misuse that position. Or at least we will be very clear that I am not going in the right direction. So this is where, if you see Shastra, there is just Dhatu, that Shastra word, and Shasan, which is to rule, also has a similar Dhatu, which literally means that if you really want to rule, you need to know scriptures. That's the whole purport boils down to this one point, that there will be leaders in society anyhow. We cannot avoid it. It can be good or bad. Leaders cannot be avoided. But if a leader sticks to this one principle of being very learned in scripture, there are very less chances of going in the wrong direction. In Mahabharata, there is a nice story where a leader, a very powerful leader, misusing his position, was creating havoc, and Krishna had to interfere and sort out the issue. This is the time when everyone was encouraging Yudhishthira Maharaj to perform Rajasuya sacrifice, a very great sacrifice, where who will install Yudhishthira Maharaj as the ruler of planet Earth. But Yudhishthira Maharaj was a little hesitant, because he knew that there are certain kings who will not accept his position as the ruler of planet Earth. Because in this sacrifice, you can only accomplish this sacrifice if everyone, all the kings unanimously approve of your position as the topmost ruler. And if they don't approve, you have to fight and defeat them. So that's the principle, that's the rule. So Yudhishthira Maharaj knew that Jarasandha, who is one of the most powerful warriors of his time, cannot be defeated. Jarasandha also had physical strength of 10,000 elephants. His army was much bigger than most of the armies available, including Pandava's armies. Of course, Krishna had defeated him 17 times, because 18th time Krishna didn't defeat him. So he had so many allies with so many small kingdoms that his army was so powerful. And literally, Mahabharata says that Yudhishthira Maharaj was panicking. He was concerned about overcoming Jarasandha. But Krishna, of course, had his plan, and he was smiling, and he gave a plan to Yudhishthira Maharaj that me, Bhima and Arjuna will go as Sanatakas, or Brahmanas, students basically, who have just finished their education, and we'll go and beg Jarasandha for a duel, a one-on-one fight. Because who will have now to defeat him with the army is very hard, so we'll have one-on-one battle and we'll defeat him. So if we kill him, he's lost, the kingdom is ours. Just by killing one person, that was very cursed. So the king must be so powerful and so strong that if he is killed, the whole kingdom is lost. Imagine if the Prime Minister is dead. You can't control the country now, because the Prime Minister is gone, because he's not powerful enough. He's just, in democratic way, he's just elected. That's it. He's not qualified, basically, in that sense. So Jarasandha, they went, and they went to Jarasandha, and how the Pandavas went to his kingdom was very interesting. They didn't go as timid Brahmanas to seek some charity. They went breaking the hills. They went smashing the gates. And he already got the information that who is doing all this? And they right. They go straight into his assembly hall and ask him, we are here to accept charity. And seeing them as Brahmanas, Jarasandha was very respectful. He seated them and he asked, why are you acting like enemies? He said, Krishna was only speaking. He said, my two friends, they will not speak. They will speak to you tomorrow. So he thought maybe some principle they are following. He said, okay, you rest. The next day when they spoke, and he asked, why you came as enemies? You could have just walked in. Why you broke the hills? Anyway, Bhima with his hand, he was smashing mountains and coming to Jarasandha's place. There are huge doors. He just smashed open them. So Jarasandha was concerned, and when he said, why are you acting like enemies? Krishna said, we are your enemies. We are your enemies. And my point is, Jarasandha's reply was very interesting. As a ruler, as in Vedic times, he is a ruler who is known to respect Brahmanas. He said that in my memory, I can't remember being having animosity towards anyone or harming anyone. How can I have enemies? He's giving his argument. And Krishna is saying, how shameless you are. How shameless can that be? Because Jarasandha had defeated thousands of kings, imprisoned them, and he wanted to sacrifice them, like kill them, as an offering to Lord Shiva. And Krishna said, is that not enough? I mean, you are saying that you have not done any bad in your life, and why you have enemies? You have done this? Jarasandha's reply was even interesting. He said, I defeated them in fair battle. It's my privilege to do whatever I want with them. Krishna said, you're crazy. They are not animals, you're sacrificing them. What are they? How are you sacrificing them? You meant to die. You did not take guidance from Brahmanas. You did not follow the scriptures. You went to die. And then there was a Jarasandha also, no? Warrior has his own ego. Very powerful warrior. So Krishna knew his psychology. Krishna said, we three of us are there. You can choose any one of us. Have a fight. And if you defeat us, you are the winner. We lose and we go back. Any one of us. So Jarasandha, in his pride, he said, oh, Arjuna is a child. Krishna, you already have defeated. You're not qualified to fight with me. Then he told Bhima, he looks a little stronger, so it'll be nice for me to have equal fight. You know, like heavyweight championships, they have whatever, they match the weights. 65 category, 60 category, like that. So Jarasandha said, equal, you both not qualified to fight with me. And that was their plan. They wanted Bhima to fight with him. So for 28 days they fought. Morning to night. So morning to night, 28 days they fought. And then of course by Krishna's arrangement, Bhima killed him. To establish this one point, that you just cannot override scriptures. You just cannot go beyond the authority of scriptures and establish your own rule, your own rules in the name of Vedic culture, in the name of a king. Jarasandha was known to follow and respect Brahmanas. Now we have another personality who came much later than Jarasandha, and that's Karl Marx. Prabhupada talks about him in the purport. Dialectical communism. Jarasandha there, who was a demoniac king, he had respect for Brahmanas. His principle was, anything Brahmanas ask me, even if my life I give. That was his principle. Very high principle, if you see. Now Karl Marx, who wanted a communist regime, which destroyed lives of millions of people actually, spoiled their lives. He wanted a casteless society. And he said that, I have studied throughout history, and I have studied all the cultures, so many cultures. And in all the society and cultures, I see that the caste in the society has caused all the problem. So I want a casteless society. I want to remove any caste within the society. But he literally said, there is one society only, one culture, where I found harmony in castes. That was the ancient Vedic Indian society, where there was harmony in the castes. That's all the societies, there is corruption. And that's why we don't want caste. We just make it one single platform for everyone to operate. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gives an interesting analysis on this. He says that Vedic culture, which was so perfect, even though there were different castes, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras, why can corruption happen is because the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas stopped cooperating gradually. And the cooperation between when both of them stopped, that led to the Buddhist preachers to take advantage of it. And they smashed Brahminical culture very heavily. In India, if you see the history of India. And then, when the Brahmanas were smashed by Buddhist leaders, then the kings, to push the Brahmanas down, accepted Buddhism. In India, we all know that Buddhism would have not spread if King Ashoka would have not taken. King Ashoka was the ruling ruler of India at that time. And when he accepted Buddhism, that's when the time when Buddhism started spread in full speed. Before that, it was very little. It was very small. So this non-cooperation, because Brahmanas wanted to suppress, Kshatriyas wanted to exploit, both stopped cooperating, and then someone took advantage, you know, the kings gave favor to them, and then completely the Vedic culture crumbled and collapsed. And so, because Vedic culture is duty driven, not rights driven. In Vedic culture, your duties define you, not your rights. Now, modern culture, if you see, everyone talks about their rights, no one talks about duties. As a citizen, as a ruling head, as a king, or even within family structure, you see, kids will talk about their rights. It's my right. You can't deny my right. In India, you still can't say you're a slap on your parents. But it's changing. It's really changing. It's my right to have pocket money. It's my right. It's my duty to serve. The parents also feel dutiful, and children also feel dutiful. Then head of the society, state also feels dutiful. Not just imagine a society which it's now. Every individual person starts talking about their right. And who will perform the duties? Who will take responsibility then? If everyone is so much concerned about my rights. So many main reasons which made the whole society crumble down. This is where in the purport Srila Prabhupada is talking about the Isha Vasanidam Sarvam principle, that everything belongs to God. Everything belongs to God. A person should know this very clearly. Knowing this, that everything belongs to God, he utilizes what is required for him. Because everything is also maintained by God. There is a very nice verse now. Nitya Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam Eka Bhavanam Yavidhati Kama. We are also eternal. The Supreme Lord is also eternal. We are also conscious. He is also conscious. But he is that one who is maintaining many of us. He is that Lord who is maintaining many of us. To teach this, there's a nice story from Shivaji Maharaj. He was almost 400 years before he was a king in India, who was in Maharashtra side of India. He was very, very famous, very saintly, very much respected by the Brahmanas, and he would also respect the saintly people. He was loved by his people. In that time, Aurangzeb was the ruler in India, who is known to be the most brutal king ever, brutal Muslim king in India. So Aurangzeb was ruling that time, and Shivaji was so powerful, so bold. Even though his army was maybe 1/10 or even less than what Aurangzeb had, he had a style of a guerrilla attacks. He would in a surprise, he would attack, basically. And when Muslim rulers were so scared of him, because they don't know when he'll come. He was that bold and very powerful. But he had a guru called Ramdas, who was ascetic, very powerful, renounced person. And Shivaji used to say that all my powers I get is just because I am very obedient to my guru. I very strictly follow the instructions of my guru, and that's why I get all my powers. So Shivaji had huge following. So his guru once detected that maybe a sense of pride is coming in Shivaji because he's maintaining and taking care of so many people. So to just teach him and bring him back on track, his guru gave him a rock. And guru gave him a rock and he said, smash the rock with your sword. So Shivaji kept the rock and smashed the rock. And when he smashed the rock, he saw a frog with some water inside came out of the rock. And his guru asked him, Guru Ramdas asked him, who is maintaining this frog? Are you maintaining this frog or God is maintaining this frog inside the rock? Shivaji apologized. He said, yes, everyone is maintained by God. I was thinking, it's me, but everyone is maintained by God. And this particular point comes in the purport where Prabhupada is talking about starvation, that no one can starve if things go by the arrangement of the Lord. But people are starving and dying because of mismanagement by the leaders, by mismanagement of the so-called ruler, governor or president. So, very, very nice, very informative stories to learn so much. In Vedic culture, the culture was of a servant, that I am serving someone else. So a Brahmana is thinking I am serving the other three divisions. A Kshatriya is thinking I am serving the Brahmanas, Vaishyas and Shudras. And Vaishya is thinking that I am serving Brahmana, Kshatriya and Shudras. And Shudra is thinking the same, that I am serving all the three above me. But the corrupted version now, which led to people criticize caste system in India, is that everyone is thinking only Shudra is a servant, only the lowest class is a servant. They only have to do all the menial things, they only have to do all the servant activities, we are the kings, we are the enjoyers. Whereas, imagine a culture, we can only imagine, it's hardly seen there. In devotee community we can still see that one may be a pujari, or one may be in a management position, and treats a newcomer as if he is the servant of the newcomer. In devotee community you can still see it. If someone is cleaning the toilet, can we still be respected as a superior by temple management also? That can, only in devotee community that is still visible, outside is forgotten. It will not happen. So in Vedic culture this particular aspect was very evident, that we are serving each other. But that serving each other was not avoiding God from the picture. Not avoiding God in the picture. Currently, just one clip came and I was hearing one of the politicians in India. And he said that when I was running for the elections, I was going practically throughout India in election time. It was as if I was going on a pilgrimage. I was going to the holy places. And the people who have voted for me are like this, the God Himself who appointed me in this position. So basically what he was doing was trying to impress his voters. Nothing else. So that's what he was doing. Whereas in the purport, very clearly we see this point that, I'll read the two lines. In the present age, the king or president forgets that he is servant of God and thinks of himself as servant of people. This is it. Going for election rallies where the worst, most ridiculous language is used, people are maximum in passion. And your only and only motive is to gain position and power. If you see that as a place of pilgrimage, there is something wrong. Literally. And if you see, you have completely removed God from the picture and you are saying that the decision of the people to me elected as in a powerful position is God's decision. It can be, but you are practically bringing God on the level of people. He literally said, Janta Janardana, means public is God. So this is the mindset. Prabhupada is saying that no, the government should not see that they are elected by the people, for the people, and they are working for to please the people. Rather, they should see
that I am serving God, and through God I am serving all the living entities. Then a proper picture can be seen. Of course, such leadership, at least that one, is better than atheistic leaders, which is completely devoid of any sense of wellness in human society in terms of spirituality. That's why Prabhupada calls this as democracy as demon crazy. He makes it in a funny way, he calls it demon crazy. I'll end with another story. There was a zoologist, she went to the jungles of Africa to study apes, chimpanzees, their behaviors, their patterns. And when she went to Africa to study chimpanzees, one thing she found out, that their way of choosing a leader is by who makes more noise. So the leader which she was trying to work out, who became the leader in her observation, that chimpanzee leader found a cane which was left by tourists in the jungle. And this chimpanzee picked up the can, an empty can, a metal can, and started beating it very loudly. And unanimously everyone chose him to be the leader. So the point she was making is that whoever can make maximum noise is selected as a leader. And this very much applies, you know, whose propaganda is there, who's out there in the people, speaking to the people, who's marketing very well, non-stop giving sermons and lectures. He is elected by the people. But no consideration of Vedic culture. At least in India we have certain government which is supporting Vedic culture. Cow slaughter is banned, which is good. But this principle still remains. So, and that's why when I read this purport, I really, the first thing that strikes me is it's impossible to apply. It will not happen. But Prabhupada must be having his own vision to at least inform us that between our small community of devotees, we can apply these principles. We can apply these principles and attain benefits of such advanced civilization, which was there sometime in the days of your Marma. So I'll stop there and see if there are any questions or comments.
While explaining to Prabhupada, you mentioned about how one should choose the duty that is according to his nature. In Bhagavad Gita, there's one verse that states that one should reject even that duty, even if you're performing it very well, that is not
correct
according to your nature. So, in this stage, of course, it is very difficult to determine what actually is your nature.
So the question is that it's very hard to determine what our nature is. And Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that if you're not acting as per your nature, then you're pretending. Mithya charasa uchyate. So how to identify what our nature is? That's the question.
Yeah, no, and it says that even if you're performing that duty very well, as is usually we would identify that you're performing good, it's your nature. But even if you're performing it very well, you should reject it.
Yeah. So you want to know what my nature is and what my duty is.
Yeah.
That's the question, right? So let's see a very standard example of Vedic culture, that a student naturally would get trained under the spiritual master, who is not just educating. A student may feel that he's just getting learning and he's getting educated, but the spiritual master or the mentors are actually observing you. They're actually seeing you. How we behave and when we behave. And what is the driving engine of our behavior. They actually observe it. So then the guru directs the disciple or the student in a certain area of expertise based on one's nature, and then evolve in that particular field. So
we as practical nouns and devotee community, if we want to really know what our nature is, then it's very important to, I'll tell you one of the lines from Sri Prabhupada's purport. He says that one should not waste one human power of thinking and intelligence simply pondering over money. Rather, one should invest one's energy under the strict scrutiny of someone who is authority in scriptures. I'm almost parroting the purport lines, maybe 2-3 lines, maybe words, maybe different, but one should put oneself under the scrutiny of someone who is authority in scriptures, in rather spending one's energy on just pondering over money. Prabhupada says this one. So what happens by that is that we are not just learning how to chant Hare Krishna and read scriptures. We are actually learning how to act practically. This is why, and for many devotees, because we come in quite ripe, mature age, where already our habits are developed, and we come in contact with devotees, it's very hard for many of us to change. And if you see, anyone, any authority who is trying to implement some change on us, we want to change only the authority. We want to change the authority itself. Because we don't want changes. And that's why it's beneficial if only in a very young age we are in contact with devotees, or if you are born in families of devotees, then our capacity to mold ourselves is much better. Imagine, you know, you come in your 30s, late 30s, 40s, and in nature someone has to change it. It's hard. Only with very good sincerity and a lot of humility that can be done. Plus, if you come in contact with very advanced devotees, their influence can then affect us. The point is that one needs to put on ourselves, we have to put ourselves under someone's guidance for them to also assess and help us in identifying our nature. Alone we cannot, really. According to my understanding, alone we cannot understand. So, therefore, is it? Alone is hard to figure out your own nature, because mind will trick you at every step. Because I like to cook, then my nature is of the cook. May not be. After 2 years, you may start hating cooking. Then what? So, can happen.
Is it known destination of karma
Yeah, so Mataji's question is, Karana was very pious. This is from Mahabharata. Karana was very pious. So do we know his destination after he died? My first answer to it is, Karana was not pious, as much as it appears to be. He was very moralistic, he was very charitable, but in his previous life, he was a demon whose name was Sahastra Kavacha, 1,000 kavachas, 1,000 shields over his body. That he gained by worshipping Surya, sun god. And when he gained, the condition after his a lot of austerities, the condition was that he wanted immortality, which he could not gain because Surya is not immortal. But then he got this 1,000 shields over his body, invisible shields. And the condition was that anyone who cuts one shield will have to die. And once 1,000 shields are cut, then only Karna can be killed. So he was smart. He says, in previous life, he says, before life of Karna. So he started creating havoc, because who would fight with him? First of all, you can't defeat him, and if you're ready to defeat him, you cut one of his shields, you die. Then who will fight? No one wants to fight. Then all the sages and all the devatas, they went to Brahmaji. Brahmaji invoked the presence of the Lord, and the Lord said, Narayan Rishi in Badri Rasam can do something about it. So what they did, what Narayan Rishi did, is that Nar would fight with Karana, Sahastra Kavacha, in his previous life, that demon, and he would kill, or he would cut one shield. And to keep the promise of Surya, he would die. And Narayan, Naranarayan, so one would fight, the other would chant mantras to revive him, and then he will fight. So he will cut another shield, then he will die, then the other would chant mantras, and then he would revive. Like that, they kept 999 kavachas, and Karna saw, I cannot fight them, they have tricked me, I will defeat, I will die now. So that's the time when he went and he took shelter of sun god. And he took shelter of sun god, and now Surya requested that I am Kshatriya also, I have to protect Karna. So you please both back off. And they again in Krishna, they knew that what is going to happen in next life, he will be persisting in my own pastime. So they left him with Surya. And when Kunti in this Karna's this life, Kunti, when she got the boon that she can just invoke any devata by mantras and she'll get a child. And as a young maiden, she just wanted to try out this mantra. And she just chanted Surya mantra. And Surya came. He said, okay, time for a child. She said, no, I was just trying out. Kunti said, no, I was just testing the mantra. Surya said, it doesn't work with devatas. It's not a website where you try to add on in bargain or something. You have invoked the mantra, you have to get a child from me. But she said, I'm not even married. This is Vedic culture. This is not now. Recently, I was reading in the US, an 11-year-old girl got pregnant. And it's a public news. But the Vedic culture, she said, I'm a princess. So they said, don't worry. I will again regain your virginity and you will, no one will know. So then, the child was born. Karana was given. So Surya, that child with one shield, was given to Kunti, who was a demon in last life. But due to his association with Suryadev for these many years, he developed good qualities of being very charitable, being very moralistic. But what happened? His charity and his morals superseded him in that he didn't, even though he literally, before the battle happened, he told Krishna, I know your Supreme Personality of Godhead. I know Pandavas are 100% right. When Krishna told him that you are son of Kunti. And Yudhishthira said that I know they are going to win. I know Arjuna will kill me. I know Yudhishthira is going to be the king. And Krishna said, then why are you fighting? Leave and come. Instead of Yudhishthira, you become the king. He said, no. My morals are better than following you, Krishna. This is the decision he took. And if you see Arjuna, he was also speaking very morally in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita.
but he rejected his moral principles and did what Krishna said. So this is Karana's history. But because he was killed by Arjuna in presence of Krishna, according to Bhagavatam, whoever was killed in presence of Krishna attained either salvation or they went back home to the spiritual world directly in association of the Lord. So, but nothing specific I know of. Okay, we'll finish here. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Pratrashna Bhagavatam ki, Rashna Prabhupada ki, Jai.